Welcome to Relatively New Flute Music Monday with Dr. Tammy Evans-Yance. I'm on faculty at Newberry College in Newberry, South Carolina, and the University of South Carolina, Aiken, in Aiken, South Carolina. Check out some of my projects on my website at www.tammyevansyance.com. The piece that we're going to be looking at today is Autumn Reflection, which is a piece for flute and piano by Jennifer Higdon. And if you don't know Jennifer Higdon yet, you probably should. This is a good time to go ahead and get acquainted with some of her works. She's, I don't want to say an up-and-coming composer because she is well-established, but she's gotten a lot of really nice attention lately. She's won a Grammy Award, and she won the 2010 Pulitzer Prize in Music for her Violin Concerto. So she has been around for a little while, but she's in the past year or so really garnered a lot of positive attention for her works. She's known for her large orchestral works, but she's also made a really substantial contribution to the flute repertoire, and a lot of this has to do with the fact, probably, because she is a flutist herself. And it's always really nice to have a flutist who composes flute music, because they really understand what the flute can do, and also what the flute can't do. So sometimes, you know, you are looking at a new piece of music and the composer has asked you to do something that is either impossible sometimes or is not what we call idiomatic, which means it just doesn't fit well on the instrument. But we know that in this case, she's going to be writing things that are definitely possible to do on the flute, and they work really well too. That isn't to say that all of her music is easy. She definitely stretches us as flutists, but we know that she's coming at it from the perspective of someone who has a really knowledgeable outlook on what the instrument can do. And so her works that involve flute range from solo to chamber work, obviously orchestral as well. And all of these works are going to offer something for most players. So their difficulty ranges from intermediate to quite advanced. And a little bit of biography about Jennifer Higdon. She was born in New York in 1962, but she spent the first 10 years of her life in Atlanta, and then at that point she moved to Tennessee. And many people are familiar with her works as an orchestral composer because she does receive probably the most attention for those. And according to the League of American Orchestras, she's one of the most performed living composers. Her path to her really successful career is maybe a little bit unusual. She is not someone who picked up, you know, the flute at age 5 or 6 and has been studying formally for a very long time. She was introduced to classical music through the flute, but not until she was a teenager. And she essentially, for the first few years, taught herself. She didn't actually start formal music study until she went to college. And at that point, she enrolled at Bowling Green State University, where she earned a bachelor's degree in flute performance. And then after that, she went on to graduate study and received a master's degree and a PhD in composition from the University of Pennsylvania. While she was there, she studied with Ned Roram and George Crumb. And then after that, she went on to earn an artist diploma from the Curtis Institute of Music. She's considered to be what is called the Atlanta School of Composers, which is a collaboration spearheaded by the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and its music director, Robert Spano. Her association with Spano is really a lengthy one. She first became acquainted with him when she was a student at Bowling Green State University, and he was the director of orchestral activities. He became an advocate of her work, and the Atlanta Symphony has commissioned works, given multiple performances, and made recordings of Jennifer Higdon's music. She makes a living through composition. She's received commissions from orchestras all over the United States. And she's currently on the faculty at the Curtis Institute. So the piece that we're looking at, to get into that, again, it's called Autumn Reflection. It's for flute and piano. And it was written for flutist Carol Winsens and published in 1994. She actually gives a really nice program note, Jennifer Higdon does, at the beginning of this work. So I'm going to go ahead and quote that so we can get an idea of what we're going to hear in the work and then what the contrasting musical material represents. So the quote is, "Reflections rarely give an exact image. Instead, they produce an image that is somehow reminiscent of the original. Autumn Reflection is the capturing of two different and distinct photographs of the season. One, the melancholy from the passing of the year. The other, the wonder of the explosions of color and a vibrancy seen only at this time of the year. End quote. So that kind of gives us an idea of what's going on in this piece. The first measure of the work is unmetered and consists of solo flute. The character of this line, which begins on a low C and hovers around the low to middle range of the instrument, seems to correspond to Higdon's first photograph of the season, which is the melancholy one. The tempo here is a very slow 42 beats per minute, with long notes and frequent ties across the beats. This serves to really obscure the beat and create a feeling of expansiveness. And then when the piano enters at measure 2, a time signature is introduced, and the piano and flute alternate between long sustained pitches and then moving material. To reach the second photograph mentioned in Higdon's program note, which is the, quote, wonder of the explosions of color, the flute part builds in intensity through range, dynamics, and note speed. While there have been some relatively quick notes scattered throughout the beginning of the work, measure 10 is where the note values become consistently quicker compared to those introduced at the beginning. And while we've had some relatively high notes in the work prior to measure 10, we start to see them happening more often here. The entire range is expanded, however, even where the high notes happen more consistently, there continues to be a considerable number of low notes reaching near the bottom of the flute's range. So this requires a flutist to have a really flexible embouchure to make the large leaps speak clearly and produce clear sounds in all of the registers. The dynamic contour in the section beginning at measure 10 also points to an increase in intensity. Previously, dynamics have been used in swells. In the first measure, we're instructed to use a forte dynamic that almost immediately is followed by a decrescendo crescendo. We see three other instances of dynamic shading at the beginning of the work, where we move from forte gradually to mezzo piano, which happens in measure 3, pickups to measure 4, and measure 7. However, beginning at measure 10, the dynamic changes are different. We reach a mezzo piano dynamic level in measure 10 and maintain that until we reach a crescendo in measure 14. And the crescendo peaks at a forte in measure 16 and is maintained until a subito pianissimo is reached in measure 19. So this dynamic change over a longer stretch of time, combined with the higher range and faster note speeds, creates intensity throughout this middle section. The intensity peaks at measure 32 on a fortissimo high C sharp, the really high one, which is the highest note heard up to this point. Immediately after, we move back to the slower tempo, drop to a pianissimo dynamic, and drop to a low range. However, the intensity is once again increased through the same compositional idea, an increase in range, dynamic marking, and note speed. Beginning in measure 33, the intensity is built up through measure 43. At that point, a high C, again, the really high C, appears to be the most important note due to its frequent appearance, and it maintains the intensity throughout such a high range. Starting in measure 46, we start to move to a lower range until we reach the tempo primo in measure 50. The end of this work resurrects the very first melody heard in the solo flute in measure 1. There is a hint of it in the piano in measure 50, and then the flute gives another permutation of it in the second half of measure 50. Finally, we hear it much in its original form in the piano in measure 52. The flute joins in with the original melody in a pickup to measure 53, but plays one measure behind the piano. This interesting combination recalls the melancholy mentioned in Higdon's program note, but also recalls the vibrancy of the contrasting section. Both instruments begin moving lower in their respective ranges into quieter dynamic levels. The note values also increase and begin to be tied across the beat as well as across the bar line. The energy quickly dissipates into an ending that seems to disappear into nothingness. It's a really nice piece. It goes over with audiences very well. It's a little tricky to put together as far as the ensemble between the flute and the piano. So by themselves, the two parts aren't impossible. They're not incredibly easy, but they're also not impossibly difficult. But the difficulty comes in when you're actually in rehearsal and you're trying to put the parts together. So it's a really good idea for you as the flutist, as well as your pianist, to make sure that you individually know your parts really, really well, so that you can, in rehearsal, sort of point out the aural clues in each other's parts that are going to help you know where you're lined up and where maybe you aren't quite lined up and should be. A really nice piece, though. The audience really enjoys it, so I encourage you to take a look at it. Flute World rates this as a 3+ as far as difficulty level goes. And so for them, that is between moderately difficult, which is suitable for high school and early college, and advanced, which is college, conservatory level. It has an extended range, technically and interpretively complex, but generally written within the confines of traditional notation and performance methods. For my money, this is more of a 4, a more of an advanced piece. So I think it's kind of tough for a high school student, maybe a college student, but definitely sort of pushing that, I think. So to me, this is more of an advanced piece than a moderately difficult piece. It's approximately 5 minutes long and is published by Laudon Press, Lawdon. So take a look at this work. It's a really nice one, even though putting it together in rehearsal can be frustrating at first. It's definitely worth taking a look at. Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love to hear from you with any questions or comments that you may have. And if there are any specific flute works that are relatively new that you would like to know more about, please don't hesitate to contact me through my website, which again is www.tammyevansyantz.com.